Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Dungeons and Dads is brought to you this week by Bespoke Post. This spring, the best box you're going to open up is the Bespoke Post box. The box of awesome is filled with carefully chosen gear from the best small brands from around the world. I just got mine
today. You got some jams.
I got some jams and jellies. I got a delightful Keen's paste. That chair said I should throw on a quesadilla.
A quesadilla?
With some Keen's paste.
Keen's quesadilla is quite good.
The Box of Awesome has you covered. To get started and be eating like a king like I will be, to get started, take the quiz at boxofawesome.com. Your answers help them pick the right Box of Awesome for you.
I got some little sticks. They smelled real good. It was like not incense,
just
but it's
sticks?
Like it's little,
just...
the little sticks that you put them in the room and they make the room smell good.
Was that the only thing in them?
There was like a little thing that you put the sticks in.
Okay.
Yeah. Like
oh, like a diffuser.
A diffuser. That's what it is. God. It's the sticks that make your room smell good.
Like, nice. The sticks that make it. What are you talking? It's free to join and they release new items every month. They release new flavored sticks every month across a ton of different categories. When you become a member, you have access to seller discounts across a plethora of products too. We're talking about 30% or more sometimes. Plus, with each Box of Awesome, you're supporting small businesses. 90% of everything that comes in your Box of Awesome is from a small up-and-coming brand. You're used to this by now. Free to sign up, skip a month, cancel anytime. Get a free mystery gift with your first monthly shipment when you sign up at boxofawesome.com and enter the code DUNGEONS at checkout. This is such a mystery gift, we don't even know what it is. So tell us what it is. The boxofawesome.com code DUNGEONS for a free mystery
Can I get this mystery gift as a member of the podcast?
Do I have
to sign up for it?
You're going to have to sign up at Box
of
Awesome.
I've never wanted to know something so bad as what this mystery gift is.
Box of Awesome.
It better not be my jean jacket, Bespoke Post. It better not be everyone's getting a copy of my cool jean jacket that I got from Bespoke Post.
Why is it they made it like the Will Campos edition?
I'm already wearing the Will Campos edition.
Boxofawesome.com, code DUNGEONS. Dungeons and Dads is brought to you this week by Greenlight. As your kids are getting older, some things about parenting get easier. Like what?
You don't have to clean their poop out of their
butt. Hopefully.
Yeah. Hopefully. But, Will, you know what is coming up?
What?
Money conversations. And the fact is, kids won't really know how to manage their money until they're actually in charge of it, and that's where Greenlight can help. Greenlight is a debit card and money app made for families. Parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on kids' spending and saving.
Freddie, I plan on teaching my son everything he needs to know about money by absolutely destroying him in a game of Monopoly that goes for 10 hours.
Well, maybe put away the Monopoly board and go with the Greenlight app, where you can teach your kid how to learn to save, invest, and spend wisely thanks to games. That's a game. Yeah, it's got games to teach money skills.
Does it have Wall Street Kid on there? I love Wall Street Kid.
In a fun, accessible way.
Hate to break it to
you, finally, a way to avoid Gen Alpha putting all their money down the skibbity toilet.
The Greenlight app also includes a chores feature where you can set up one-time or reoccurring GATs customized to your family's needs and reward kids with allowance for a job. Well done. Did you guys get paid an allowance when you were a kid?
Yep.
What was the allowance? I had to mow the lawn.
I had to empty the dishwasher, and then, like, that was it, I think, for...
You had to do, Beth?
You just had to mow the lawn.
I had the big lawn. Suburbs.
Big
dishwasher.
I just had a lot of chores. It wasn't like one chore. It was like I just had
to
do chores.
Yeah, I just had
week.
To like clean. And
my parents
yeah.
had kind of Skinner box thing going on where like I would just do chores and occasionally I would get to buy something. And that was the real way to keep your kid doing those chores.
You had company script
The intermittent reward thing.
Yeah, exactly.
I learned like a little dog. Yeah.
We go to the mall. Maybe we go to KB Toys. Maybe not.
Millions of parents and kids are learning about money on Greenlight. It's the easy, convenient way for parents to raise financially smart kids and families to navigate life together.
Sign you up. Tell me there's an easy, convenient way to raise kids?
Financially responsible
kids.
Responsible ones. Sign up for Greenlight today and get the first month free when you go to greenlight.com/dungeons. That's greenlight.com/dungeons to try Greenlight for free. Greenlight.com/dungeons. You're about to hear, for the very first time on the main feed, an episode of Talking Dad, which is our Patreon after show where we discuss each episode a week after they air. On this episode, we go over the entire season one of Dungeons & Daddies, talk about the process behind our characters and the story, the challenges and joys of using D&D as a storytelling system, and offer some tantalizing glimpses into what might have been and what's to come with Fetch Quest and season two of the show. We've been doing this for just about the entire season, so if you like what you hear, head on over to Patreon.com/DungeonsAndDads to subscribe to our Patreon, where you'll also be able to get an extended edition of this episode where we answer listener questions and you can hear exclusive, never before heard audio of Beth dunking on my grandma. That's just one of the many Patreon perks available, so take a look at Patreon.com/DungeonsAndDads and consider supporting this show directly. Thanks so much for listening, and without further ado, Talking Dad.
Welcome to Talking Dad, a podcast about a podcast that, if you're hearing this, you probably just listened to the season one finale of.
Yeah,
so, just listen to it again.
A podcast about a podcast that was.
So that's it. Housekeeping. First of all, we're going to continue doing the show. That was season one
finale.
It's a little
bit of housekeeping
that you heard, and we're going to do a season two. Actually, Freddie, do you want to go through the whole schedule of what the next few months is
going
to be?
Yeah, here's what's going on.
Yes, please, Freddie.
Will is going to be taking on DM duties for a 3-episode miniseries called Fetch Quest, about 3 dogs and 1 cat from our world flung into the Forgotten Realms.
We heard your requests, and we are going to start trying to make Fetch Quest happen.
Wow.
While Will does that, Anthony is putting final touches and prepping for season 2 of Dungeons & Daddies. Same universe, continuation of the story.
I like to imagine that Anthony has like a beta testing group of like his like other improv
comedy friends. People I respect exactly like 14% less than I respect you.
Like, and then you're trying it out with them to like see how the system works before you upgrade to the major leagues.
If this is your first time listening to Talking Dad, like you're not subscribed to our Patreon or whatever, this is basically just a show where we talk about the episode that we just did, the episode at large, and honestly, about 70% of it is just us bullshitting about movies and stuff that we like.
So, and it's after, like, The Talking Dead. Like, get it? Like, from The Walking Dead, they have The Talking Dead on AMC.
That.
And
it's funnier, like, 3 years ago when we started this podcast.
Like, really,
so it's, like, a little bit more relevant.
Very relevant. Started it.
Very
hip.
Very cool.
I guess we'll get to change the name for season two.
That's true.
If we want to.
Ooh, people still, because people don't know who we're playing for season two.
They don't.
In the Discord, I did let loose that we're not playing the same characters. I did not give any spoilers about who we're playing, right? Like that, but I thought it was fair because a lot of people got really. I saw on the Discord quite a few people got excited.
Oh, cool! I can't wait to see the dads fight.
The dads
doodler.
Are coming back. Yeah. We should definitely be clear. The dads,
because the continuation of the story element seems like we're playing.
Yeah, I don't really say the dads aren't going to come back because actually, I don't even think we know if our specific dads are coming back. But the story is continuing, but we will be playing different characters.
I would like to ask this question to the group because I don't actually think it's a spoiler to say, basically, generally speaking, what kind of people you are in the next season and what the concept is.
I think it'd be fun to say.
I
don't want to go into details about like who our characters are, one, because I'm still working on mine.
We'll say it in the version that gets released on the page now.
No. But I think we should. I think we can say what the.
Yeah, go for
okay,
it.
Okay, let's go. Count on 1, 2, 3.
Wait, we're going
to YouTube simultaneously?
Yeah. Actually, let's try this. Let's see how close. Let's see how we all describe the group that we're playing. And then Anthony will describe it for
Freddie,
real.
Freddie, who's editing this, goes, no.
Ready?
But we're doing it. All right.
Okay.
3, 1, 2, 3.
We're playing our parents' grandkids.
We're playing teen grandkids.
We're skipping one generation. Oh boy. We're skipping one generation, and we're going to be playing the kids of the kids in the show.
Yeah. So Lark and Sparrow and Grant and Terry and little Nikki, their kids are going to be the player characters for next season.
They're the dads now. Those characters are precious to Anthony. He refused to let us play them. He said, Grant,
IP.
Terry, they're mine.
Yeah.
But that's in the future. Let's talk.
And Beth's playing a daughter.
I am. I'm playing a left-handed woman now.
Very brave. Which is great, because we get to blame the second season being bad just on that.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is an episode that's about not just the finale, but sort of the series as a whole. And something that we do on each episode of Talking Dad is like, hey, what was your favorite moment of the episode? Which I want to do, but I think also we can open it up to like, do you have like a favorite moment or maybe a least favorite moment of the series, or maybe both? Like,
So just some little things I want to just lay out, just because this was something I was thinking about today. We started this podcast in 2019.
Yes.
Mm.
We
pre-pandemic.
We're talking about it in 2018, the end of 2018.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We did a test for this show about 3 years ago.
After Trump's election, we said we need to do some brave political art.
So
we need to do something about escaping to another world.
And then what was crazy to me is half of this show was recorded during the pandemic remotely.
Ridiculous.
And apart from each other, which is, boy, oh boy, what a journey this has been.
And then half of that time Glenn was in a prison cell,
yeah,
separated from all the other characters.
It's been a wild ride. So it I just want to throw that out there in terms of, like, I mean, you know, we've all taken on various creative projects of various sizes and scales. This is definitely one of, like, the larger single contiguous ones, mm-hmm. right?
Well, this is the first one we've done people gave a fuck about.
People care about Borderlands, Anthony.
And Borderlands.
No.
People cared so much about it, they hate you.
Yeah, we never got
that's
that
not
good.
Why they hate me.
Yeah, we're not even there yet on this podcast. You don't make it big till you got a real hate group. I mean, I'll just start with the, I don't want to think about the specifics of the show, or my brain hasn't figured that out yet. My brain hasn't figured that out yet. I don't have a least or most favorite moment. But my least favorite moment in terms of, like, the process was definitely, like, the first time we had to record remotely.
Yeah.
For a whole, as anybody could probably understand, for a whole variety of reasons, like, that was just a tough time of the year. And I definitely remember simultaneously being relieved that we had something that we could still do remotely, but just, like, it really felt like the world was ending.
Yeah, I saw in the Discord and then on the Twitter, people are like, wow, you know, this show has helped me through something. And I was like, you know what? This show helped us through some stuff,
yeah.
too.
Oh,
because this
yeah,
was,
dude.
Like, our creative rock through the pandemic. That was, like, the old reliable thing, and I really
took
didn't
it for
like
granted
it.
During pandemic.
Yeah, it was especially nice was. Being able to just see you guys and have a way to make myself laugh, like just to have a group of people that I loved hanging out with and just that we could go have fun. And then to do Talking Dads, but also just like the live listens and like feeling plugged into the community was like a big part of that. Like, again, we dropped Rocks Rock during
oh my god
pandemic.
You're right, we recorded and dropped Rocks Rock.
Yeah, that was little. I remember thinking right at the beginning of the pandemic, I read that thing that was that people were like, well, you know, Shakespeare wrote King Lear during quarantine for the
you're like, I could do better than
the
that
plague. And then I literally, like, I had the 2 weeks of feeling like completely miserable and freaked out. And then I was like, fucking Rocks Rock shall be my King Lear. Like, I had that thought to myself. I was like, I'm going to throw myself at this because if I don't, I'm going to go crazy.
And then Taylor Swift had to drop 2 albums.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty fucked up.
Yeah.
All right. Come on. Did she drop 30 episodes of a Dungeons & Dragons podcast, though?
No, but if
fucking
she had,
love to listen to
Taylor Swift. She's been
incredible.
Just holding on to
Taylor,
that without
Taylor, if you're listening, we want you on the show.
Taylor, we know you're listening.
What? You should name your character Taylor Swift next.
Holy shit.
Oh, yes,
change
your name.
Holy shit.
That's
yes.
really good. Taylor Swift
yes.
is so
fucking
good.
Fucking manifest that shit.
You heard
Olivia
it
Munn
first.
Manifest that shit.
Shit, I'm going to just... I mean, yeah, you're my best friend now on the show.
Oh,
like,
that's
for sure.
So good.
My character's just going to love you. I can't, because I won't be able to say Taylor Swift without, like, smiling and wanting to be your friend. So
until you meet your nemesis, Katy Perry.
Damn.
Also a man.
Letter K.
KD.
Kyle Terry Perry. It's been really wild to, like, enjoy something consistently over 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, this has always been a thing where whatever else was going on, like, the end of democracy / the world, knowing that, like, hey, once every 2 weeks, I get to, like, do this very weird thing with my friends and Beth. Like, that's like that's like invaluable. If we could give you a little bit of that, of like, hey, every 2 weeks we get to listen to 4 funny people and Anthony do some shit, then I hope we could do that for you. Because I got a lot of messages. I, like, my Instagram started being like, hey, this person put you in a reel. This person put you... And I think it's just them thanking all of us for, like, the show or whatever. Don't thank us. Thank you for listening and being kind about that stuff.
I mean, you should thank us because we put on a pretty good show.
We put on a pretty good show, I think.
But thank you.
You thank us just by listening. You don't have to ever thank us for anything. By listening or Patreon... Actually, if you really want to thank us, Patreon is a fantastic way to do that.
I always felt from episode 1 that we, like, had something. I didn't, you know, I don't know if it was any good. But I remember the twist that you threw in there where it's like, okay, Grant's skin is going to be eaten, which is, like, so violent and, like, so, like, over the top, like, a grotesque even. But I was like, ooh, real consequences for us fucking around. Like, I just felt, like, so happy with that. I remember just being on cloud. Now, we recorded episode 1. We had to, you know, we did the intro a couple of times to try and, like, settle into it a little bit to try and find a good way of just very concisely and quickly getting into everybody's character stories and getting into the sort of interpersonal relationships within the characters. But I remember very much being like, oh, yeah, there's something here. I felt very satisfied with that.
I was very happy that you were involved in this from the get-go, because at no point during the beginning of this process was I like, this is actually a good idea. Like, Freddie and I were just hanging out one time and like we were talking about what if, you know, D&D archetypes were dad archetypes, and Freddie was like, that's a good idea. I'm like, is it? And then we started doing the thing and he's like, we have something here. I was like, I don't think we do.
I remember the first, like, 6 times Freddie explained the concept to me, I was like, so is it like So they're dads and they play Dungeons and Dragons? Like, but like, well, how do they have magic? They're dads. Like, it is a testament to Freddy's ability to pick one, because I was like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, because, I mean, Freddy says that about a lot of ideas.
No, hold on. Hold on. Everything I think is a good idea is a good idea.
No, it's the world that's wrong if they don't go.
But here's the thing. I'm ready to back off from it.
If it was a bad idea, then it was his good idea to call it a bad idea.
Exactly. Here's what's a good idea. Knowing when to stop.
That's true.
Honestly, out of all of the things in the episode, getting a little tiny Stud Stampler cameo was my favorite.
Oh my God, yeah. Man.
On the main feed.
Great. So actually, just like backtracking a little bit, because you guys were all saying important stuff about the show as a whole. I feel like, I don't know, I've had a lot of jobs and I've had a lot of stuff that I've worked on. And compared to every other thing that I've worked on and gotten money for, I'll make that caveat, is that even when this was hard or frustrating, or even if I felt shitty about myself or something or whatever, the job never sucked. And that's like way more than I can say about anything else that I've ever been a part of.
This episode was interesting because it's, you know, our first two-parter and we got him with the
That was a Beth special, right?
That was Beth. Both parts of that, because it was also Beth had the dad joke was your idea too.
Yeah, so all of the stuff that got guessed. But, you know, I feel like it's an honor to get guessed by...
If something gets guessed, that just means that like it made sense and therefore was good.
Yeah. That's what I take it as.
I thought it was a good cross-section of, like, I think all the little bits and bobs that I like about the show. It's combat that gets kind of, you know, undercut by something clever. It's weird character things that kind of go off to the side, you know. And I thought it was, you know, just sort of a fun, entertaining sort of way to get everyone back together. I remember the record for this one was the longest record we ever did. This was one of the funniest things ever because I was like, oh boy, this record took 6 hours. And then we hear from our friends who are like, yeah, that's a typical D&D session.
That's,
like,
that's a light session of D&D.
How? But, you know, it's a little bit different, obviously, if you have like miniatures and you're not trying to be funny.
Also, because I was thinking about that, but I thought the feeling of it was weird. It's fun listening back to it. One, it's been so long since we recorded it. And then two, I do think this is one where, not to say it wasn't fun to record, but it was definitely...
It was not fun to record. But
because it wasn't just 6 hours, because that's like one thing. It's like, oh, 6 hours. No, it was 3 days with a lot of recording, like many hours each day. And in between that time, it was also like, it reminded me of like a film shoot where like we're just so exhausted that it didn't feel like the end. Like, you'd be like, oh, it's fun, like we had, like, Beth posted those nice pictures of us, but like,
you can see how wiped we are.
It was like 1 o'clock. Like, there was no like real, it was like, hey, good job everybody, like we did it, and then like go home. It's just exhausting. Like, it was honestly, like, listening back to it this time, that's like when I finally was like, oh shit, it's over.
Yeah,
it really
kind
of hit me, like, not till now that, like, it was actually like the end.
To talk a little bit, just very briefly, for those of you who don't know, for the recording process, we basically, it was everything from
5 episodes were all
did together. We do 5 episodes
that we did
including
four.
This two-parter, so 4 but yes, 5 complete episodes were done in
5 episodes. So basically we rented an Airbnb to do basically a ginormous batch record. Normally we record once every 2 weeks, but we were like, we're gonna do a big run of these because we thought that, like, this ending's gonna be gigantic. We're gonna want to kind of have the momentum of it.
Also, like, 3 of us are disappearing on a film shoot for like 2 months.
So it was like, yeah, we wanted to get a lot of that stuff in the can, so to speak, so you guys could have the bandwidth to do that. Should we just go to the end? We're a little scattershot, but this, you know how it goes.
So I, in contrast to what Freddie was saying, I fucking hate this episode, generally speaking.
I did
until, I don't want to say I was talked down from the ledge, but basically my experience having finished DMing, you know, all of the stuff that we did that weekend, I was like, I fucked that up so badly.
Oh, that makes me so sad to hear.
No, it's not like it made me upset. I was just like, oh, well, you know, it's the next thing to try to fix in going forward. For me, like, the ideal finale in terms of a big fight, like what you want out of a big fight, or at least what I want out of a big fight, is people you care about getting really, really close to death or dying, and like really big dramatic moments. And like, oh shit, you know, it's Independence Day does a great job of this, where it's like, cool, all we got to do is get the shields down. Oh fuck, why aren't the shields down? Okay, cool, they're down. Now we just got to fire missiles at it until it goes down. Oh fuck, it's not going down. And we're out of missiles. Oh, well, one guy has a missile. Thank God. Wait, it's the drunk guy. Okay, well, he's not drunk right now. Oh shit, wait, but he won't fire from his thing. Like, there's all these like,
you got to finish the scene. I'm on the edge of my seat.
Holy shit.
And then he says, up yours, and it's fun. We didn't have any of that. Everything you did worked the first time, and everything was great, and everything was totally smooth, and like, just purely from a game design-y D&D session, like, setting
up and downs set.
There's no ups and downs. It's all ups. Everything goes perfectly according to plan, which to me makes it dramatically inert and kind of suck. The thing that makes the episode as a whole work for me, though, which I think Will may be more aware of in our Discord chats afterward, was like the fact that everything being sunshine and roses during the fight contrasts really well against like the literal end of the world in the epilogue. And so I'm like, I have come to peace with the finale itself as an episode, but I still think like if we ever do a big fight at the end again, I want it to be, you know, Serenity.
There's a sense of anxiety that I knew I went into this like batch record with that I think you actually scared me too good. I think that like
yeah, I scared you into learning D&D.
I mean, in narrative storytelling that you're like controlling, you have some sort of sense of like how close to the sun you can get. But like with this,
that's like a really good metaphor.
Okay, actually, the only time I've ever like cheated on a roll, and this wasn't even cheating.
Go
really.
On.
Once you admit it once.
We were all knocked prone that one time, and I knew that I could do uncanny dodge to half the damage, but I had had no damage by that point. So I was like, yeah, no, I'm knocked prone and I get 17 damage or something.
Wait, you lied.
You cheated to you do lied more to make it worse. To juice
yes.
it.
Oh, wow. That's better. Okay. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. That's great.
It's because he wanted to use a D&D ability.
That's how you know we weren't in real danger.
Yeah.
So it's like, I think we're all being so careful to just get out alive and to make things like work well.
Yeah, I think
that we've kind of let some of the other larger suspense maybe.
I honestly thought like just as an episode, like I thought pretty much in between mommy's arriving and us having our scene with our wives, like that part kind of drags, which is us trying to pierce.
Yeah, because there's just a bunch of people trying to put a bracelet on a dragon.
Yeah.
But exactly.
Like, oh my God, that was so frustrating.
Can you imagine if the fucking, if the climax of Star Wars was just Luke trying to like pierce Darth Vader's ear?
Do the same thing a bunch of times?
But like, imagine Luke shoots 20 torpedoes
and the first 18 miss.
And then you're just listening to be like, damn it.
This will sound weird for a second, but it's like the same problem I think that rom-coms or comedies have in general, which is like the third acts often suck or they just feel so different because like once you get close to the end, like the demands of the ending of a satisfying narrative often are like counter to like what you're there for in the first place, especially like straightforward goofy comedies. It's like you're watching like Pineapple Express, like, yeah, this is funny. And then it's like, well, the ending's gotta be dramatic. And then it's like ignores everything that was fun about beforehand. So like D&D is fun because you don't know what's going to happen, but then like endings have this finality. So like your disappointment is still just down to like the dice rolls. Like, yeah, it could have gone better. And like, if it wasn't the ending, you wouldn't think anything of it. Be like, oh, that combat could have gone better. It could have been more interesting or whatever it is. But like what you set up in terms of like the conflict, in terms of like the three dads are there, we got to get our kids out. There's like the portal, like all that stuff was like really exciting. And then like, you know, how much specific narrative elements it's up to the dice roll, or you make them not up to the dice roll and then it doesn't feel like D&D anymore.
There's a middle space though, which is like, yeah, there's die rolls, but it's like, I also could have just not let you roll the die to try to throw the grenade out of the van type stuff. Like, there's a lot of stuff I was doing by just DM fiat that somebody in the Discord put it pretty well, where they're like, Anthony is the dad who's like, hey guys, I'm serious this time. Everybody goes to bed early and then 30 minutes, they're all eating pizza and watching Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Like, I couldn't be as mean as I wanted to be.
It could be just as redundant because like me getting blown up or whatever could have turned into just another gameplay loop of us trying to get something pierced
that's
through the
true.
Ear. Like you never know like what's going to happen.
That's I also think it's weird. I don't know why this has kind of just hit me, but in fiction, we love watching our favorite characters like fuck up. They make the wrong choices and stuff like that. But then I think that there's this element of listening to people play D&D, or you want them as players, you want us as players to do a good job.
It's like a sport at that point, right?
Yeah.
Like in a weird way, D&D has this almost sport element because you're rooting for characters in the way, knowing that there's an element of this that's not written, knowing that
there's rooting for what
control.
Happens to the character, but there's also like rooting for the player to play the game well.
Yeah.
So there's this weird kind of sport element so that the characters are beyond just fictional characters. They are players in this framework. And in that context, you want them to do well. But then the problem is if they just continually do well, there's actually nothing interesting about that. I mean, I think one of the biggest takeaways for me from just the show as a whole is how interesting a storytelling medium D&D is. It is kind of a way of exploring a narrative space, exploring a character space in a way that generally writing fiction just doesn't touch because all of you folks are in the room, right? Like we've talked about this a little bit in the past, but you know,
one of the people in the room is working against you.
Yeah, exactly. It's actively antagonistic. And what you want and you might have in your head this really perfect narrative of like, oh, this is gonna, like, I want to talk a little bit about this, which was, what were my thoughts for Glenn at different stages throughout this show?
Yes, definitely.
Oh,
yeah, go for it.
You know? So like, what was cool was just having that shift all the time. Like I had had thoughts prior to Glenn's courtroom arc. And by the way, someone had done the math on that. And it's staggering to consider how many different directions this show could have gone. Like if I could have a reality bending time machine thing, one thing that I would love to see just out of selfish curiosity is,
where would the show have gone if the pandemic didn't happen? Mm. Like, what would have happened if we were still recording in person through that pivotal middle part? And then very specifically, someone had done the math on this on the subreddit. Glenn, based on the roles there for his trial, was more likely to have been getting a not guilty verdict based on that, right?
So there was a bad role. Yeah,
so there's a bad role there. So it's like,
it was a lot of bad roles. I think when you rolled for your defense, you never got a number that was above a 10.
Yeah.
Wait,
so,
could you imagine like Marvel's What If, but not if the pandemic didn't happen, but what if the pandemic didn't happen for this one podcast?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Dungeons and Dice is brought to you this week by Hims.
Oh, is that the one you use?
Hims is changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch.
Emphasis on cum.
Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options.
How do they know about my cum fort?
ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple, 100% online, no uncomfortable doctor's visits. You answer a series of questions on their site, and
why
the medical provider.
Why is that to be uncomfortable with your doctor?
Because my doctor's always like,
why do
what?
You need ED pills?
What's wrong with your dick? They shout at me.
What? Oh, does somebody's dick not work? Doctors
hard.
Are like that all the time.
Yeah, I know. They just yell at me. They scream, get hard, and it is the only thing that gets me hard. So how does Hims help with that?
Answer a series of questions on their site, including, Matt, you'll probably use the long response option to sort of describe all of your things going on. And a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you for free. No insurance needed. You'll love this line, everybody. If ED is getting you down.
Oh,
it's time you join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers to get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/daddies. That's hims.com/daddies for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/daddies. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. Dungeons and Dice is brought to you this week by Etsy.
Ooh.
Etsy.
Let's see what's in store today.
Listen up, listeners. We're here to tell you there's no reason to panic next time you're looking for a perfect gift. Now.
There isn't. Oh, thank God.
Now.
Oh, I can relax.
You ready for this? Gift mode on Etsy. Gift mode on Etsy.
I'm always in gift mode.
Stress out of gifting so you can find the perfect item for anyone on any occasion. Just tap or click gift mode on the Etsy app or Etsy.com. Answer a few short questions about who you're shopping for and what they like, and then gift mode instantly gives you curated gift ideas. Check it out. I'm right here on the site. Check it out.
Okay, let's find a gift for my dad.
Find a gift for Beth right now.
Okay,
for my dad.
His interests are like not Beth.
Yeah.
Beth, would you say that's an Aquarius?
A Libra.
There's grooming gift boxes. Now, hold on. I know what you're thinking.
Keep your dad hairless. Keep daddy nice and smooth.
For a smooth daddy. They just pre-categorize a bunch of stuff. There's a lot of camo hats on this page, let me tell you.
Dude, okay, but those hats all say dad, and my dad doesn't want to do that.
But what about dada?
Now find a gift for me, because I'm sad.
Oh, wait, Beth, yeah.
What does Beth want?
What does Beth want?
A dad.
Beth!
You sound like a
90s kid.
Yep, that's me.
Handmade shrines, you said? Gift tape, mixtape gifts? 90s sweatshirts and tees. Tons of stuff. If you need to find the perfect gift, don't panic. Try gift mode on Etsy now.
So like I had plans for Glenn in terms of just like, oh, here's how I might want to explore this. Like I think I'm trying to think of the specifics. So like to me, I think one of the endings that I had in my head early on, which of course did not come to pass because, you know, the narrative shifted underneath my feet. But I was like, oh, I think that Glenn's ending is confronting the death of Morgan with his kid, with Nick. And like the end scene in my head was them going to like visit her grave. I want to set up that he had not gone back to it or like was avoiding it, visiting it with Nick. And then the end of that was him being like, you know what, let's go to Universal. Like that would be like the dumb character, like my little cute character growth, which was playing the idea that it's like, oh yeah, he's come to meet Nick halfway and has come to, you know, sort of confront some of the parts about him. And, you know, hey, the dice do what the dice does. And we got what we got. And I'm very happy with the way that Glenn's arc went. I think it's really satisfying. I'm very happy with the Christianity joke, which, you know, I just crack up every single time I think about it because how fucking
stupid
it is. I'm
also very happy with the Christianity joke.
There's a thing you hit on, a good, not paradox, I don't know what to say, but like the conflict of playing and doing storytelling is like, for Daryl, I was very much like coming into this like more like an actor, being like, it's not in my control. Like it's Anthony. Like I don't want to think ahead of time, because I think as a storyteller, you're thinking about what's most interesting for the story. So your motivation often should be running counter to what a character motivation is. Like the person who's writing Frodo has a different want for Frodo than Frodo. And I want to only think about what Daryl wants. Like
yeah,
Daryl,
that's one of the things you're really good at.
Like Daryl wants something. Whereas like the more accurate thing as a story would be like, well, I as a writer want Daryl to like, you know, have a bittersweet thing and like suffer and like do this. But like in the moment, like I want to be like Daryl. So it's like, I never really thought of it until you're saying it like that. But it's like, as a writer, your motivation is one thing. And as a character, your motivation is the other. So like, I feel a lot of this is just like a balance.
So you didn't have the same kind of experience Freddie had of like, I have a long-term ending.
No,
I
never like thought about what like.
Matt was really interesting because I remember talking to him about some of this stuff and, you know, just sort of like kicking some ideas around. And like, I was asking him about sort of his prep and he was like, I do not want to be thinking about this show until I'm sitting in front of the microphone starting the intro and then I'm in the show and that's where I'm going to react to, which I thought totally works.
But maybe that's why Daryl doesn't do as much. Like,
I think it's actually, I think we have a good balance of different approaches because I think like
because Will will send me anxious texts on the weekend being like, what about this for Henry?
Yeah. Like I backseat DM fucking Anthony all the time. Like I remember doing like the most stressful part of the campaign for me was during when like the Glenn stuff, we broke the pattern completely where every other dad had like 3 or 4 episodes to get your little time. And then, you know, we're going to move. And it was like, we had the trial and then the trial turned into the Jody thing, which was still kind of the Glenn thing. And then we had to go get Glenn. And then it was like this whole, and I was like, how the fuck are we going to write Jimmy off of the show?
Yeah, Glenn hogged the arc for sure.
So I was like, it was just keeping me up at night. I'm anxious. I can't help but try to break the story. So I was sending Anthony fucking texts all the time. He was very patient about putting up with me, being like, what about this, that, or the other? A little sneak peek of Fetch Quest for a second, because this is what it made me think of, like playing with all
four of you. Which we've already recorded.
Which we've already recorded. Because it was interesting being on the other side of the table and seeing how you guys are as players in terms of like how you're feeling out your character, what you're doing. And one thing that I like, Anthony had this moment where like I was laying out a plot thread and then like you were in your doggo mode, like you were like but it's like I could see another writer brain at work being like, oh yeah, I'm gonna pick this thing up and play with it as my character to help Will move the story along. I was like, oh, thank you so fucking much. I was like, oh my god, if we, it's like, I, because it's like you want that get, I don't know, I just think to me the classic moment of this is when we go back to Neverwinter with the pyramid. Anthony has set up thinking that the pyramid is where like the fucking mommy twist happens. There's like the whole like you got to go back and face what you did. And we get to the gate and it's like this very hard moment because it's like David Boreanaz wants the dads to come in and face their crimes or whatever. And then Daryl's reaction is very much like, fuck no, like I'm not doing that. Like I'm out of here. Like, absolutely not. We have to save our kids, which is totally natural. And then like for me as Henry, there was a bit in my head where I was like, I could totally justify Henry being like, no, I'm not going to, like, I'm going to agree with Daryl and just leave. But like I was thinking like, I really want to see what's in that fucking pyramid. Like, as a player, wanted to go there. Mm-hmm. So I made this move with Henry to make it about something else where it's like he feels guilty.
Oh, that's interesting.
He feels like,
it felt very of his character. Didn't feel like you were like metagaming.
I was walking into that. And actually, that was the reason I set up, I think I have the dad fact about the parrot at the beginning and the parrot getting killed and like his sort of guilt over that happening. And it was like, even then I was thinking like, oh, maybe this will be something that can come back when they talk about the pyramid. There was kind of a positional move, and then it leads to this ginormous blow up between Henry and Daryl. Like it was this big irresistible force meets a movable object moment, which was really intense. But I think it was good drama. Like I texted Matt afterwards. I felt really bad yelling at him.
Wow, really?
Yeah, I was like, I felt awful afterwards because it was like, it was one of those things where it was like 90% Henry and Daryl, but it was 10% Will and Matt. Being frustrated. So like, I was like, are we okay?
Look, which but, I think a lot of the listeners picked up and they're like, I don't.
They're like, ooh, this is
bad energy.
Yeah, this is a little real.
But I remember that episode too because I think that was the episode where I had Ron just like walk away from the group.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Yes, which is my favorite thing that you do.
Yeah. Well, and that again, like. That was I don't even know when we recorded that, but I would say that my approach has changed a lot. And I'm actually trying to get back to maybe my original approach, thinking about season two, where it's like, yeah, like Matt, I came in and I'm just like, I am not going to think ahead of myself. I'm not going to interrogate like the character. I'm just going to fucking feel it out and then see what the room needs at the time or whatever. And then I feel like as I became a little more confident, you know, just as a performer and then as a writer, especially just like doing this with you guys for a couple of years, I think I was able to see the machinery working in a way that I wasn't able to before and prepare more of the writing elements of Ron's sort of arc. Although I never really thought about like what the end of it would look like for him. But I definitely felt that during like the last chunk, I found myself thinking way more in writer brain and in terms of like in satisfaction of the arc and stuff like that. And there's a part of me that's chill with that, proud of like how it all ended up. But there's like a part of me that kind of really wants to prioritize being a little bit more more in the moment about stuff like that. Because I, you know, again, thinking about that conversation with the pyramid and stuff like that, I was really bored. And I think that Ron would be bored too. And so it was just like, I don't know.
You definitely 100% made the right call for the finale though. Cause it's like, we know we're wrapping up. And so you going into writer mode so that like, you know, the cool thing that Ron is going to say to his father when he gets rid of his father.
Yeah.
Like, I think it elevates, doesn't hurt the moment. Cause you feel not only yourself, but Ron, the character, getting confident in a way that feels like a really satisfying culmination of my
art.
Oh
yeah.
Like
yeah,
even in a meta sense, like I think my favorite part of this episode is like, so if you've seen Edge of Tomorrow and or Live, Die, Repeat, it's a Groundhog Day movie. And every loop, the first thing that happens is Tom Cruise wakes up with a guy kicking him and going, "Get up, maggot!" And like looking at him like he's a piece of shit. And then like 90% of the way through the movie, he's been through so much shit and he's feeling existentially like completely changed. He's a different person on the inside that the guy kicks him and he goes, "Get up!" And then like Tom Cruise just like gives him this fucking look and he like silences him. And it's like, oh my God, this guy has changed. That exact moment was Beth saying, "I'm going to use my uncanny dodge." And like, there's something in the confidence that the way that Beth says it, I'm like, this is a different person. Like, it felt like I've never felt a character arc in my soul in the same way that I did when Beth like has that confidence for playing D&D.
And there's a part of my innocence that I crave and I want back. So
honestly, I think one of the things that's great about this, just as a creative thing for me, is just like you get into cycles and this was something different. Like I haven't done like a podcast and I haven't like done acting before, and like when you get struggle over something over and over again, it's nice to break free of it. I think it's natural, like as we get farther along and we're approaching the ending, obviously there's more of our character that we've already developed, so we kind of know, you know, essentially when it got to my arc, like I more or less would think about it. I probably texted Anthony like once per arc. I was like, "Hey, I know I'm gonna be talking to Grant soon, like what do you need to know about Frank?" You know, it's like I know we're approaching this, so like obviously like as I got to like something that I knew was gonna be about Daryl, there'd be like things that I just wanted to make sure I internalized and knew. But like, I think it's good as we start season two to like not be in like that rider mindset 100%. As much, because I think that the magic of it is that we had no idea what the fuck we were doing and you let the game create it. And most of it's just like, I feel like I'm often like overbearing. So like, I was just telling myself to like, trust Anthony. Like, this is Anthony's story. I will be the character in Anthony's story and do like the thing and not like try to... It's tactics versus strategy.
And it's natural too, because right, it's the arc of a narrative. When something starts, the possibilities are infinite, right? And I remember very much feeling like that sometimes, where there's so many iconic aspects of the show that were just digressions, right? Payton and Bullywugs was...
Oh my God, yeah.
Right, like the joke of there is like, what if there's like a Applebee's or a Chili's in this world? Which is a total fucking ridiculous, stupid lark, right? And as you approach an ending... It's not that it's you don't still have possibilities, but the feeling is that, okay, doors are closing. Possibilities are closing, right? You're approaching an endpoint. So naturally, you're starting the realm, the web of possibilities gets narrowed down. You're heading towards an endpoint. So I think that is something to keep in mind, which is just when we start again, we will once again are in a world of whatever the fuck interests us or that we find funny.
In that case, we're in a good situation because we already recorded a test for the next season to see like, you know, do these characters work? Or do they bounce off each other? And
it was fine.
So the fact that we're already like, and feeling a little bit uncomfortable is, I think, probably...
It's a good place to be, honestly, I think.
Yeah.
Because I was doing all this work and all this stuff trying to do prep for season two. And then I went back in the process of coming up on the big anniversary of like the 3 years we've been doing the show or whatever. I went back and saw like, what was the prep I did for season one? And it was like, not a lot, very little. And most of it was playing off of like riffs that you guys did. Again, Bullywogs, Payton, the Blood Pact. Was just like in the moment, Daryl being so confident at the way he could lie about this and be like, okay, well, it's fun to just say fuck you and then make it a thing that you have to deal with.
Yeah.
So my hope is that we can be a lot more on our toes and a lot funnier and getting back to that.
Honestly, I think that was one of the things I learned, not to bring it back to Fetch Quest again. I'll stop doing this. But the as a fellow DM, Anthony, who's done three episodes of this show, because it was a one shot, I was like, I pretty much baked the whole thing going in. Mm-hmm. Like, I had a plan for basically everything you guys did. And like, I would love to do even a one shot where that wasn't the start. Like, it was like, I'm going to have one thing planned and fucking figure it out from there. Like, mm-hmm. It's like, I think it's a rookie DM thing to want to really over prepare. You told me that after the first day. It's like, you're going to do this for the first one. And then like, you're going to want to never do this again. I was like, that's very true. But I agree with you. I think actually like having the core concept, figuring out what the core concept is, figuring out everyone. Again, I think it's basically just coming up with a character that you feel like you can have fun playing with for, you know, a good run. And then go from there and just keep it loose, I think, is a great idea.
I was going to say, you don't want to do the DC mistake, but almost everybody's mistake since Avengers, which is like, everybody's like, I want to do the Avengers, and they forget, like, it took a lot of smaller movies to get to the Avengers. So, like, I think you get this high. Like, honestly, we all love, like, fucking going through, like, Ron's, you know, past.
Memories.
And these are all like, high moments. So then the instinct is, like, season 2 is like, ooh, all right, get to that high moment. It's like, no, that high moment takes 50
years,
episodes of fucking around and like building the characters and doing all that fun stuff. Like, I feel like once you get that high, you try to start that high again. It's like everybody after the Avengers, like, great, we're just going to do the Mummy. It's going to be the universal, like, France. Yeah. It's like, no, it's like you got to start
Avengers,
over, which is hard. You got to
start
Avengers
over. Parallel is even wilder because, like, where did that come from? It came from Iron Man, a movie that was like 45% improvised on the day.
Yeah.
Like, and was all pretty much just a comedy. And like, whoops, turns out that's really charming and fun if you do it correctly. Like,
And one at a time.
And it's also like, this is probably some scientific principle or something, but like by observing something, you change it. And I think by knowing that you're observed as a performer, you accidentally.
Yeah, that's true.
That's crazy. That's like a totally new scientific
idea.
I
don't like you at all.
Damn.
So
it's the May uncertainty principle is, I think, what we'll call it.
But
it may be there. It may not be.
It may be there.
Basically, once we all sold out and I got a bunch of followers on Twitter, then I lost all of the magic that made me special in the first place. And that's my arc.
That's your arc. It's your cross to bear.
That's my devastating cross to bear.
I think that's what's going to be fun about playing like teens. It's already nerve wracking because it's
so
like, you're like holding, you're like, you, yeah, there's just, I can't really rest on a lot of the
lore. It's funny because like, I'm not a dad, but I was like, I can play a dad, no problem. I was, like, I was a teenager, but I'm like, how am I going to be a teen? I'm a 35-year-old man. What am I doing?
The trick is we all were teens once. So.
I know. That's right. I went back and I was like, I'm going to read my old high school journal.
Did you?
Yeah. Oh my God.
I booted it up and I got a page in. I was like, I can't.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to read some of it because I was like, I journaled pretty much every day.
Whoa.
Like, that's so cool.
Junior year, senior year, and then I started petering out during college, but I'm so glad I did because it is like this fascinating document to look at. Like, I was so horny and so frustrated.
Yeah.
And I was like angry that I didn't have a girlfriend, and it was either that or me talking about video games. So it's like,
holy,
you know,
shit.
But anyway.
Man, I gotta go find some of my old fanfic.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
and
I've shown mine. You need to show yours.
Yeah, I do. Even recording Fetch Quest and then these other miniseries and stuff like that, I think that I come to expect a certain amount of quality or whatever from whatever we do with Dungeons and Daddies to transfer over. And I forget that, you know, like, it does, but it takes a second. It takes a second to find it. So
I think what we have is really special is just we just naturally have a very good chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Matt, Will, and Freddie have worked together for a really, really long time. I knew you guys for, you know, a couple of years. We were going to rock it up the show. Beth, did you know any of these folks before we started doing stuff?
I went to a bunch of parties over at your sister's house, and Freddie was there a few times.
Right, yeah. Like, I'm constantly flabbergasted by how much we lucked out at the fact that you and I have melded with these three that have melded with each other and, like, all of our guest stars and all that kind of stuff.
You know what's funny? I'll let you guys in on something behind the scenes right now. All of us have great chemistry together. Anthony and I have zero chemistry one-on-one. It's only like, Anthony will go and open the door and be like, hey, and then he'll come in and then we walk up the stairs to Freddie's door in silence.
That's not true. This time I said...
everybody.
Yeah. It's hard to do
Anthony.
That.
I complimented his pants because I didn't even know what to talk about the last time he let me. I was like, I love your pants, Anthony.
Well, the last time he did that, I was like, oh, so Will doesn't like my pants.
Oh no!
No, but it's fine. It's just a function of that stairwell, because when we bring people up into Freddie's room, there's a small stairwell that's not long enough to have
not
an actual conversation about.
Conversation.
And there was a real conversation going on in Freddie's apartment next to the stairwell. So, like, I can't start a proper conversation because then we're gonna have to stop and wait. It's a function of the stairwell.
I'm just gonna leave Will fucking hanging for 15 excruciating.
Yeah, dude. I literally answered the door and I was like, "Hey, Freddie's playing piano in there," and Will went, "Oh."
Yeah, so you got to talk about someone
real
else.
Real world chemistry doesn't matter, though. It's just about
it
the chemistry
matter.
Here.
It's fine. We've done ad reads that were fine. Just Will and I did them. They were okay.
They were all right.
I knew we were going to be fine because Anthony was a fellow Guardian for a while, so I knew our chemistry was great. Beth, I wasn't sure about, but then, like, you know, pretty much after the first bite, I was like, oh, great. Like, that's awesome.
Beth was on Story Break a couple of times before we did Dungeons and Daddies. It's like, oh, she's fantastic.
Yeah,
I didn't know you were on before Dungeons and Daddies.
I was.
That's where I was like, she's a fan of our stuff, so that's how I know we'll work well together.
She worships the ground I walk on.
Yes. Yeah, I was on an episode of Story Break that I am more proud of than anything else.
And you were like at our agency when VJ, like she read the first
book
of VJHS.
Do you guys know about the VJHS connection?
No.
Okay, so I was interning at your guys' agency.
It used to be called The Collective.
The Collective.
Management company,
right?
It was a management company, yeah.
When they were first, like, introducing me to their clients or whatever, it was just a bunch of, like...
Cool bros?
It was a bunch of cool bros. And I read a few scripts for VGHS, and I loved it. And then one of my last weekends in LA before I went back to college, I was, like, on some sort of, like, promo shoot or something in Burbank, and you guys were there.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know this. I just know that you read the scripts. So we, like... We're in the same room at some point.
Yeah. I didn't think about it again until I met Freddie like later and I was like, oh, dang. I was there.
That guy was an asshole when I met him.
Yeah, he was a total no.
Can we talk about our favorite bits from the season?
Please do.
Yeah.
Yes.
So for me, let me start. It's Beth's double throat singing Silent Night.
Good choice.
So here's a couple of things that happened there that I realized. One, the Christmas music zag, because originally Glenn wasn't a Christmas music cover band.
Is that where it happened?
When we were like,
I forgot about that.
Because it was forever a thing.
No, because that was the only thing that I could sing with my dumb voice.
Right. And then after her, I was like, oh, it'd be funny if Glenn
gets
showed up.
That was why you got upset.
Yeah. Like, oh, that's much funnier.
Fuck, that's
and then,
crazy.
So that's special, because originally it was that, as far as Glenn was concerned, he's in a cover band. If I could change one thing about this show, I would have gone back and done dumb dad jokes and like puns that we eventually landed on for every title. Like, I think we started off our titles like a little too serious. Mm-hmm. And then there was a moment where I was like, is there a world where every title is like the title of a dad rock song, which is obviously very, very restricting. But like, mm-hmm. I was like, okay, I was like looking around at like dad rock playlists on Spotify, see if there's like any titles of songs that match. So that was as far as Glenn went. It was cover band rock and roll guy. Mm-hmm. And then after that particular episode, I was like, this specific specificity, which was like, I think really cool. And also it's just something I think to even keep in mind, which is these big character details. You don't have to have it baked.
That's true. That's
up
very
until
true.
The moment. You're right. Like, it was one of those ones where like even the flip of, oh, Glenn secretly DJs, right, is another one that was not part of it from the beginning, which then in retrospect makes certain things really weird and funny. Like the idea then that he would like is so against that.
Yeah.
That he would, you know, let the jewels go because he doesn't want to be the Linkin Park cover band DJ during the whole Scam Likely bit. So that particular episode was probably the first one where there was like a real significant amount of time spent in the sound design and music side of it to land that beat specifically to, you know, to have that. And like, I remember Beth, right? You came over. It's actually one of our first Patreon video bonuses. I think it's like first video bonus, which was the video recording of Beth coming over to do just for that little blip of a track on there. And, you know, I think that prior I'd done like some music stuff here and there for, you know, like the YouTube videos or friends' movies and stuff like that. And always I've liked doing it. Like, I have all the software for it. It's just not something that, you know, like I have. You know, it's not like my full-on career. I'm not focused on music composition. So I was like, oh, cool. Every time I get a chance to flex those muscles, I really enjoy. And I remember putting it all together and like timing it out. And that was a really weird specific one because like we're going off a recording and then we're going to use a song that we record and the tempo needs to fit.
That has to sound good enough that you buy that the crowd is blown away by it.
And then we're playing a game. So it's not like an audio drama where it's like Anthony's a narrator of a book reading a thing. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things where it's like we're laughing at jokes and stuff. And so it got really detailed in terms of like, oh, what am I cutting out of the jokes so that the timing fits, all this stuff. But I remember having that hit and then playing for it and just like cracking up by myself in my place just because I was like, it's such a weird zag that this natural 20, maybe the most consequential natural 20 for the show and at that moment in time.
It was electrifying in the room when you got the natural 20. I remember screaming. You were like, I got natural 20. It was like, oh! It was also one of those ones where it was like, It's fucking Glenn's arc.
Yes.
And
yeah,
the whole scene is being set up for Glenn to play a song with his fucking son. And then Ron can come up with this stupid plan with two bands and this whole fucking thing. And we're like, we're going to go be bad so that you guys look good.
Look good, yeah.
And then Ron fucking
upstages Glenn.
And then, yeah, so it becoming one of the iconic Ron moments. To then you guys run away and go to Bullywugs. Like, it was such a.
And that's where we find Payton.
Yeah, oh, man. That
wow. Yeah, it led to Payton.
Yeah.
And that also has Will's first check, please. That fucking
I think actually that's my favorite stinger ending out of all the endings one. Is check please.
That was such a hacky joke,
but that's the ultimate thing is to do the hack at the best.
That's when we knew we were allowed to.
Yeah. It was also literally like, how often do you actually get the opportunity to do the check please joke at a restaurant when they're all sitting down? I was like oh my god, I have to say it before someone else does.
I will say that without check please there would have never been a who's your daddy.
There started to be a bit of it was like, oh, the stinger joke is like a thing, and then it felt like there was definitely like a bit of who's gonna get the last joke now. Yeah,
I felt like it was like, what's like really good, and then like every movie tries to copy it. And there's like a moment where it felt like every episode like should have ended, but then like we're all kind of like, can't we just have like a serious ending? It's fine to just like end on a cliffhanger.
And then it would be like just me being the most toxic person ever. Like, well, my stinger was funnier. I don't know why I got cut. Looks like I'm not in the Easter egg either. Looks like it's just some dumb conversation.
The number of times with like during that era of like episodes 10 to 40 where like people would all make like end jokes and be like, do we have an ending? I'd be like, yeah, those were all very funny.
What put a stop to the zinger era was the episode that ends with Ron asking Willie, do you love me? And then Anthony just be like, you wake up. And I was like, shit, that's even better. And that's when the sad boy series of Dungeons and Daddies ending started.
Yeah, that's when you know the show stops being fun.
The funniest I've ever felt was being like, oh my god, I've set up a Disney joke. That's why I avoid non-Disney
rides. Yeah, that was a killer one.
It was maybe the highest 2 minutes of my life being like, I have the strongest joke. It's ready to go.
Which joke is this?
Where the moms die. And we're reading all the notes and crying.
Oh, and he's like, that's why I go to Disneyland.
Yeah, he's like, that's why I don't go to Universal Studios.
Right, right.
It was just like, ooh.
And the sadder it got, the funnier I felt. It was like, ooh.
had the grenade cooked in your hand. You could feel it ticking away in there. Like, oh, I'm going to release
just
this.
Just more troops were lining up in front of
more
you.
More and more troops. Yeah. As you guys were fucking bawling in the room, I was sitting in the corner just like, this is going
to
kill.
Whenever I'm even remotely close to that situation, Freddie, I always like barf it in the worst way. I'm always like, that's what she said. And everybody's like, what the fuck? Why would you say that? Why would you even say that? Oh my God. My favorite joke overall is the intro where Will is like, I bet you're wondering how I got in this crazy situation.
I don't remember that.
I don't remember the second intro.
Yeah, I don't remember.
I just thought that was so funny. And then the howl after one-on-one time with my son, or should I say one-on-wolf time in the back. Yes, I fucking die.
Yeah, the intros.
The intros is a very strange thing. So here was the original idea with the intros, which was, you know, having had friends and promo cutting and stuff like that. It's like, it's an art form to be like, what is a quick summary of the previous episode? Adventure Zone does a great job of this, you know, with the previously on, and they're doing like a little clip thing. 24 does that too. I was like, I don't like the 24 style previously on because it spoils what's coming. Mm-hmm. It has to, right? The needs of that is to be like, oh, this is going to happen. So here's a quick scene of this. So you know that, oh, this is going to be a story that it touches on. So it was one of those scenarios where I was like, okay, the goal is a little reminder for everyone coming in, you know, after every 2 weeks, which is enough time to forget about what happened previously. Just a reminder of like, okay, what happened? How can you do that as entertainingly as possible? So the first one that I did was Hotel California parodies. And that was an in-universe
foolishly
one.
Foolishly opened the door to all of us to pitch you song parodies for the next 3 years.
The song ones took so much fucking time. And by the way, evidence that Glenn was not a Christmas guy, right? Because I'm like, oh yeah, it's a dad rock song, Hotel California. So that was where it started. And then it just fucking like every fucking dumb thing I've ever done on YouTube, it just spirals out of control and becomes these crazy huge ass things, which I think it probably some
was
of the
there
most
ever
fun.
A week where it was more work on the intro than the episode itself?
No, the episodes are long enough for it, but like definitely some of the music ones were like incredibly
that was the Jolene
involved.
Cover is the one that fucking melts my brain still, where I was like we should do a heavy metal Jolene. I banged out some lyrics and then just like just with the fucking drum kick and the harmonized vocal obstacles in the show. I was like, what the fuck happened?
This the Jolene one probably was the most work in terms of time. I think I very distinctly remember that, which was like, I woke up on a Sunday and I sat at my computer. On the Patreon, there's a video of this where I had the feeling, I'm like, okay, I know how to approach this. So I'm like, I think I should record it just because I think it's gonna be really fun to watch. I remember looking up and be like, oh, it's nighttime now. Like, it was basically an all-day affair for that one.
I think where the intros really took off is once we actually, weirdly enough, stopped worrying about them recapping. Because I think I think the whole recap
they still thing, all do kind of, though, which is,
I mean, it's like it turned into like us doing like audio fan art of the previous episode.
Yeah,
like, like a celebration and a reminder, like a nostalgic, oh, that was fun. Like, remember that episode without trying to explain it. It was
it's
just like
a cold open for the show, basically.
Yeah.
It's a week making fun of what you did the week before.
Yeah, it's just like, this is really, it's fun because it's like this weird, because it kind of became that. It became like, oh, what happened previous episode? Oh, it'd be fun making fun of that episode.
How do we it's just like, how do we parody what we did last week?
Which is like, it just became really fun.
This might be recency bias. It might not. When Notby is talking to Ron, and it's like, so why do you feel so anxious about your father? And Ron's like, I don't know, that's kind of personal. I don't know if I want to talk about my father right now. And he's like, okay, that's fine. Well, how are you feeling right now? And he goes, scared about my father. Like,
scared about my dad.
Scared about my dad. It's just like such a I felt like I was the backboard in a game of one-on-one where there was no other player, and it was just Beth passing and assisting to herself and then slam fucking
alley-ooped
dunking.
On
just alley-ooped to herself. It was fucking so good.
Dungeons and Dads is brought to you this week by Aura Frames. Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life?
All the moms.
The moms, the MILFs.
How come none of these
moms I'd like to frame.
Aura Frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. It's super easy to upload and share photos via the Aura app. And if you're giving an Aura as a gift, you can even personalize the frame.
Hey, Aura, challenge accepted on unlimited photos.
Unlimited. You can personalize the frame with preloaded photos and memories. For Mother's Day, that's your great Mother's Day gift. You know what I mean? Just send her some pictures of you doing stuff. From grandmothers to new mothers. Okay. Well, no, like activities. From grandmothers to new mothers.
Activities we're talking about here.
Aunts and even the friends in your life. Every mom loves
friends.
And named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages. There's a lot of things that can bring joy to moms of all ages.
Nice.
Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's Aura, A-U-R-A, Frames.com. Use the code Dungeons at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply.
Dungeons and Dads is brought to you this week by Mint Mobile.
It is.
Oh wait, we're
Ryan.
Back.
We're Ryan.
We love you. We missed you. We're sorry.
Ryan.
We may have stepped out on you in
international. I don't believe that Ryan has a cell phone because he would have called back at this point.
Hey, listen, Ryan. You told me all about those overpriced wireless providers. How there's always a catch. Well,
and we got 5 tickets to a certain movie coming out pretty soon.
That's
Ryan.
When I heard that Deadpool v Wolverine was coming out, I called all my friends on their Mint Mobile
accounts. I was talking about Challengers. I'm so excited about that tennis movie.
I'm sure Ryan would love to watch it with you.
Yes.
I said to my friends, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan. I thought, what's the catch? But there isn't one, you fool. Mint Mobile secret sauce, they sell wireless service online, which means that they don't have retail stores. They don't have to buy those kiosks in malls, and they pass those sweet mall savings directly onto you. I have Mint Mobile on my phone. I duo queue it. I got multiple lines. It's great.
Wow.
That's fantastic. And by the way, I'm more often than not, honestly, my normal phone is kind of like not as good service.
How many phones do
you have? You can have. Hey, modern phones allow you to put multiple.
Is Freddie stepping out on us with other podcasts?
Oh my gosh. Say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plans. Jaw-dropping monthly bills and unexpected overages. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you.
Dimension 20's calling on that other cell phone.
With premium wireless plans starting at $15 a month.
Freddie, we want you back.
All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan like me and bring your phone number along with all of your existing contacts. Ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/dungeons. That's mintmobile.com/dungeons. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/dungeons.
That was a great ad read, Daddy. Can you read it again?
$45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower, above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
I'll talk about two things. One is like a group thing, and one is just my favorite thing I got to do as Henry. So for the group thing, the Deck of Many Things episode.
Yeah, like, that was fucking really tight.
Yeah,
it was. Yeah. I think that to the Glenn stuff, that was the turn from when, like, okay, now the doors are closing on the show. Like, because that was, like, to me, like, almost like the midpoint of the show. It probably is. Because it was so fucking wild. And it had,
it's 44, I think.
A little bit over past the midpoint, but, like, it was such a daredevil move. And it was, like, I remember being terrified, like, what are we going to pull? How's it going to go? The fact that we got Well Actually out of it, like, and, like, that insane turn of, like, Scam Likely showing up and then doing the thing and then him drawing the card that makes him go away right away. Everyone getting fucked over and then Glenn getting more and more powerful until in his fucking hubris, he draws. I mean, starting with him killing the squirrel is like...
Yeah, and immediately leveling up.
And then getting a tank.
Whenever Freddy says his human gun, I just fucking lost it.
And then all of that building up to him fucking yeeting himself like he's gonna square down with death. And then, yeah, so then you're like, oh shit, he drew death. It cannot get worse than this. Yeah. And then he draws the one that throws him into a crisis. So then Doug starts running after him. It was just crazy. I loved it.
People may or may not believe that. Like, we did not script that.
If we had tried to script it, it would
and
not have been
And that's a perfect example, like,
yeah.
to your concern about the finale. Like, that episode could have been fine.
Yeah.
Women could have very easily could have just been whatever.
I just, to go all the way back to the finale, I think the finale was six bad dice rolls away from being a barn burner of suspense. And that is out of your control. Yeah. It's like the end of Mountains of Dadness. I think we all want the finale to always be as good as the finale of Mountains of Dadness, where it came down to the most clutched thing of all time. But you can't ask for that every time.
That's fair.
So my favorite thing I got to do as Henry, I mean, I love doing all the emotional stuff. Like, it was really empowering and exciting to do that as an actor. Like, his run in Oakvale, like, I'm really, really proud of that work. I think my favorite thing to do was the courthouse. I am a Law and Order boy through and through. I grew up watching court stuff. I never did mock trial as a kid, but I always daydreamed about it. And so to get to do, like, the objections and the cross-examination, getting to do, like, the, are you winning, son? Have you ever been winning?
Oh my God.
Like, to get to do, like, the, all that, to, like, bring in Air Force One and all that, like, the, like,
oh, yeah, that's right.
Like, submitting Air Force One as evidence. I mean, like, it was a literal dream come true to get to do a closing argument. Like, I was so,
you
was
were
so
super exceptional
fun.
At that. That was
you're really
you
into that.
Really shown.
Yeah. You could feel the electricity that Will's like, I get to do Defender stuff.
It was again, you were all incredibly generous to let me do that. Like, it was also one of those ones where I think, like, I must have just been vibrating with excitement at getting to do court shit.
It was all remote. That's what's
and
wild.
And it was also remote, too. But that was a total delight. And I
also love that the punchline to all of that is you did an amazing job, and then the verdict was the exact opposite of
That's
what you were arguing.
That's the justice system, baby.
I did not kill my friend. I did dismember him. My favorite episode to record, I think, in the room was the House of Riddles episode. I just had a blast
the
with that.
House of Riddles? The Scam Likely one.
Scam Likely.
Where he gave you all the, like, options to, like, lose your soul or, like, whatever?
Or, like...
Scam Likely's House of Riddles or something?
The Scam Likely one, or do you mean the book one? The book castle?
No, it was when we were in person.
Yeah,
the
yeah,
book
yeah.
castle one,
oh,
I
that,
was
okay,
too
that's the one
before.
Where Ron can't wear pants anymore.
Yes.
Holy shit,
yes,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was another saving grace, because that pants meme was going to take over. It was like, okay, let's get Ron a new thing, like, because they again the I hide in my pants was another, like, such a fucking out there crazy good joke from the beginning of the
you
scene,
know
from
it
the
just seemed
show.
Like what to do at the time.
So that was funny, because not only did that I hide in my pants, right, and also one of the best, like, Beth moments in the show, which is, you know, hi hungry I'm dad, figuring that out.
That episode is fucking full of really good shit.
I love that episode.
Not only that, but there's a great thing.
The pyramid, that you confronting Sparrow and turning him into a love wolf.
Mm-hmm. The frogs, yeah.
The frogs.
Yeah, you want to talk about clutch D&D things affecting the story? That literally is because I ran after Sparrow to jump on the thing, and Lark was downstairs, which is how Lark and Sparrow essentially became different characters, was then led to what we wound up setting up season two with.
Yeah, that's
wild. Holy shit.
Yeah. Also, it turns out I switched those names at some point on accident, but who cares? But that's funny. That whole episode, I think, is everybody firing on all cylinders. Like, even Matt being like...
Even Matt.
Because it's not Daryl's episode. Daryl has nothing to do in that episode. He's the least relevant character. Because, like, at least Freddy is like, I'm going to try to get us out, and he fucks up, and it's, like, funny. But Daryl's like, I'm going to grab both of these kids, and I'm going to fucking mama bear and, like, dissolve this shit. And it's just like, you understand Daryl a lot better after that episode, especially because it's also right after he sees all the people having sex. He's like, I don't know what to do with it. Like,
when he walks into the pit.
Yeah. It's just like everybody's characterizations really solidify. What is that, episode three?
Yeah.
Four?
Well, I might as well then. I was just going to say my favorite moment, which is the pyramid. On Other Talking Dads, I don't think I've ever done favorite moment as like myself, because like, one, I don't even usually remember what I do or care what I do. It's just like, I think specifically
I'm
in terms
so
of,
humble, you know,
it's just otherwise I would go crazy.
You would. You'd be like me and Beth.
Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about, Will.
No, I think about myself all the time, but it was the pyramid, because it was two things. The pyramid and then because I don't care about compliments. The only compliments I care about are from Anthony, because he doesn't give compliments. So when Anthony said Matt
knows. That's how I know they're working.
Yeah. When Anthony said Matt knows what an episode needs. So I think the pyramid, to me, that's essentially became the moment where I understood like how I could play the game, because it became.
Oh, interesting.
Honestly, like I want to try to be funny. I want to like move the game forward. But like me, like being like a fucking comedy fanatic and loving Chaplin and like character driven stuff and like a writer, like it was. The thing Daryl would do would be throw, like, again, a million things. D&D would have been like, I jump down and, like, I'm a barbarian, so I use the axe and I attack.
My double
and
attack was, to, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I'll
and
rage.
It was like
and
something within character that I think will change the way things are going, but make sense for the character and work for the gameplay thing. And, like, the moment the pyramid, and that whole episode was just, like, already fun in the first place.
Your
like,
decision to throw the bag of beans.
Yeah, I decided to just throw the bag down. Yeah. I was like,
I think that when we all heard about the bag, it was like, we gotta dump that fucking bag out.
But it was the moment that happened, and then everything spiraled, and then it just all became really funny, and then, like, everybody you got, like, the frogs, and you got, like, the crazy stuff with the kids are trapped underneath.
Yeah,
then
Mark almost dies, yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, like, I shouldn't be concerned about, like, winning D&D. I should be concerned about like playing the game
winning
in a fun way that worked for
friend.
My character. Playing in a fun way that worked for the character specifically.
Yes.
So like
yeah,
I try to, because
yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah.
not about not being aware of the game. It's about like thinking about like what would be fun and also what would Daryl yeah. do. And then like from that moment on, I was like, I know what I'm supposed to do or I know what I'm in for.
The pants thing out of that episode came out of like I was talking to somebody about like playing D&D and they're like, well, what kind of character? I'm like, I'm a rogue. And they're like, well, that doesn't sound like a rogue. You just sound like a stepdad. I'm like, well, like, yeah, I don't.
And he never talked to that friend.
Great job, friend.
I'm just like, well, I don't know. Like, what is a rogue supposed to do? Just be like, cool. And they're like, no, they're supposed to be like sneaky. And so I'm like, well, I got to do something sneaky this episode.
No way!
And so that's where I hide in my pants came from.
Amazing.
Because I just thought it would be a sneaky thing to do.
I think one of the fun things about the premise in terms of how it lets us interact with D&D, because they're dads, they're not from this world.
Yes.
They have a plausible deniability about their actions as players that you wouldn't if you were in, like if you were playing an actual barbarian who like was in the Forgotten Realms and knew what a bag of beans was, like you wouldn't be able to convincingly roleplay that he dumps the bag of beans open.
Yeah.
Like, so then
well, I
being,
throw it to Freddy. I don't dump it on purpose.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah but yeah. It's like being like four dads who aren't from the world and not really understanding what's going on. Like I think, especially in the early episodes, that fish out of water element, like had big dividends on a comedy
yeah.
level because it let us do things that felt authentic to the characters that wouldn't necessarily be things that like a normal D&D character would do.
Yeah.
Matt, when you settle into it, I think some of the hardest times that I've laughed because like you come up with some of these jokes that are like so from the perspective of the character that it shocks you.
It's like, yeah.
It shocks
yeah,
you. You're
it's
like,
infuriating.
Then like the stinger of like, oh, do you think they need DJs in the Forgotten Realm? It's just like, yeah, that's what Daryl would say. Uh-huh. That's 100% what Daryl would say.
Daryl just snapping the neck of Glenn's dreams.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Glenn's like, I think I'm going to stay. And then it's like,
do they need DJs?
Do they need DJs here? We're just like,
need a job.
What's great about that, you can, after the fact, map the thought process.
Yeah,
and it's
yeah,
so
yeah.
obvious in retrospect.
Yeah.
It's like,
he's
oh,
looking out for Glenn. He wants to make sure Glenn can have a fucking job, but he's not
he
emotionally
job.
Present enough to realize what that will do to him in the moment.
It's so fucking good.
The stuff with the World War One pee garments, too.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
This is one of my favorite openings for Aiden of Hardcore History.
The Hardcore History. Oh, yeah,
oh my
yeah,
God.
Yeah.
And Freddie's intro in that was like,
yeah.
he's like quotes directly from the transcript, like what Matthew said.
That's
so
right.
Like,
Dan Carlin.
As I recall, he said, I think I read that.
Shit.
Did he react to that online? Or no, it was the History of Rome guy.
Yeah, like, the History of Rome guy, which was fantastic.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Very similar. He was like, yeah, because we blew up his Twitter, basically, because people were like, oh, there's a shout out to you on the show. He's like,
oh,
okay.
Dope.
He's too big now. Now he's got two New York Times bestsellers, so he wouldn't do that again.
We did the inverse with You're Wrong About, where we got that You're Wrong About bump before the show went away. So
yeah.
we have to treasure that for the rest of our days.
Yeah.
Just because we're on the topic of intros on that, I think that like one of the things that gives me the most joy is taking the artistic and formalistic framework of something and trying to match it as close as humanly mm-hmm. possible and then doing something absolutely absurd in it. It's like one of my favorite videos that we ever did on YouTube was Pimp My Horse.
Oh
which was,
my God.
Which was like Pimp My Ride with a Horse. But like I remember digging through like sound libraries online and I bought a pack of like production ready, non-scripted music, because it was really important for me that I was like, it has to be this kind of music. So anytime we did a podcast parody, like I think the Radiolab parody, I had so much fucking fun with in terms of just like the way that they talk about things and they like intro and they I don't know. It's just like, to me, the formalistic.
Your Robert Krolwich is very,
very good.
But playing with the formalistic elements of something is like so fucking fun to me.
The fucking part in the Radiolab one that specifically takes me out is when it fades down on Jimmy's voice. Like, Jimmy's like, so oh yeah, I run the shop, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, he runs a shop. I don't know why that got me. And then you hear someone break something in the background. It's so fucking chaotic.
No, because that's the best part of that Radiolab one, too. It's just like, really, you have to paraphrase, like, what were they saying that you have to they gotta come in on shop. It's like they do that all the time. It's like, yeah, I do. It's like, he does this. Like, why the fuck did he cut out in that moment?
So Freddie is extremely detail oriented when it comes to editing, and specifically when it comes to hitting like aesthetics like that. And I was like, man, this seems like a lot of effort for blah, 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 blah. And then afterward, a friend of mine who I worked with who listened to the show was like, dude, that Radiolab intro, the part where you say Ange instead of and, like at the beginning of Radiolab where she says Ange, I fucking died. I was like, okay, Freddie's right. Like
Dungeons Ange Daddies.
Dungeons Ange Daddies. And like, fucking kills. This is more recent, but the audio design of Glenn having sex with that woman and like him going up and getting some water and be like, like him scratching his belly while you hear the audio going on in the background where I think Beth's doing Sarah Koenig or something. Like,
yes. Beth's doing the Spotify lady.
Spotify lady.
Just listen to
I promise you, Talking Dads is not just us laughing at our own jokes.
It's a lot of that.
The only thing we haven't done is talk about other movies and stuff, which is what we do.
That's true.
The fucking Paid and See You Again rap.
Very good.
I think maybe the biggest reaction we've gotten to an intro.
Because of that intro.
I think it was like, we can do rocks rock.
Yeah, I remember you came over. Unlike Matt, you got it in one take. Matt got it in the course of about 4 hours.
It's punching down when I openly admit I'm terrible at something.
But my point is, I'm trying to elevate.
I'm horrible at music.
I'm elevating Will by saying, I was like, oh shit, Will, hey, we could do a rap album here.
I was like, hey, Matt, because I'm elevating Will.
Yeah. I'm elevating Will by tearing you down.
That's for one of you to go off, the other one has to get
hurt. I'm going to fucking write that down as a way to devastate people. I'm not hating on my dad. I'm elevating my mom.
That was so fun putting that together. And again, like, I love everybody's verses on it.
I recorded mine in a closet with no metronome and only me thinking about what my verse would be in my head. And so
that was a little harder to edit.
The fact that Freddie was able to edit it, I was young then. I didn't know.
I'm trying to think of the comparison, but that was like, I remember coming over here and Freddie being like, not to tell.
It was like the Whiplash scene. I remember you telling me that at one point.
Oh, yeah, but no, it was specifically because I was like, I had my verses, like, well, I've practiced. I can't rap. Freddie's going to find out, like, I literally cannot hold a beat whatsoever. And then he's like, oh man, this rap's pretty tough, but you know, I mean, you could tell Beth's a poet because she wrote something that's like really clever, but like it doesn't fit the tone of the rap at all. And I'm like, yeah, that sounds tough. He's like, yeah, I don't know how I'm going to edit it. It sounds really tough. I'm like, oh, that sounds really hard. He's like, anyways, Matt, let's do you. I'm sure you'll be easy. I'm like, the whole time he was complaining about Beth, I was like nodding along, be like, oh shit.
He was just trying to build you up.
Yeah. I'm just building you up by putting her down, Matt.
I was like, he's about to kill me.
That'd be wild if you really leaned into it. Like, yeah, Beth fucking sucks.
Yeah, that's fucking terrible.
Oh my god, you call those bars? All right, I'm going, homie. Put me in the headphones.
It's okay, because you've written yours to the beat. I'm like, yeah, the beat. All right, let's do this. And I just remember distinctly Freddie's face when I first went through. He's like,
that intro is such a relic of my previous life, because I remember I wrote my verse like at work between phone calls and then recorded it in a closet.
My two personal favorites would probably be when it was like my dumb idea, then I was able to bully everyone into letting me do it, was the Aaron Mankey lore intro.
Oh god, yes.
There were people complaining where they were like, I switched podcasts like three times because I kept thinking it was lore. And that made me very happy.
And then at the end when you're like, this is Will Campos impersonating Aaron Mankey.
That's my favorite Futurama joke that Rich Little does during his Howard Cosell impersonation. Like, he just introduces himself like, I'm Rich Little impersonating Howard Cosell. And then the other one that is like, it was such a, because I've been listening to so many audiobooks. Like, I got into this whole thing about audiobooks.
Yes, oh my God.
So we did the Tantor audiobook for the snake
parody. That one was so funny.
I fucking love it. But I was like, again, it's like my favorite little bit that you never think about is like that little Tantor audio presents Pride and Prejudice. And there's always the phrase like holds the copyright there too. So I was like, we got to do it. And then it was just like the fucking guy we got was so good.
Yeah.
Like,
that was a Fiverr special. Yeah. That was me going on Fiverr being like, I need a British gentleman to read an audiobook.
Agent Bennett.
Yeah. I remember being like, the message on Fiverr, I was like, okay, so this was a little weird. Here's the text. And then I need you to just hiss like a snake for like 30 seconds. And he's like, oh, I got this. And then it was like literally just perfect. I was like, this guy rules.
I was watching Taken a couple months ago. And I remember our Taken intro. I really liked doing our Taken intro because of Anthony just being like, good luck.
Oh, and can we talk really quick about how blessed we are to have such fantastic guest stars?
Oh, my God. Yeah. Yes. I mean, holy shit.
I constantly think about how good Radicus made that entire trial thing because how good Jenna was at being a genuinely intimidating foil just from her confidence and competence.
Jenna comes in and Radicus is like very intimidating, but also you're like, Radicus is a better person than any of you guys. You feel like you're double screwed because this is a really good prosecutor, but also like a much better human being than the dad.
Yeah. Jenna does what every good guest star does, which is she made me feel like a guest star on my own show. Like I came in, I was like, oh shit, this is Jenna's like law show and I'm here. Oh,
She understood the tone going in like instantly. Yeah. She knew how to be antagonistic in a way that was playful and still made her likable, but also made it very clear that you were not on the same level as her.
Yeah.
You have to act really fucking smart to get on to Radicus's level.
Yeah, her performance eluded like confidence and professionalism, both as like a performer and as a human being that I will never have. Yeah. I just really respect
And then, of course, Ashley Birch.
I feel like Ashley's all great. Three guest stars, we gave them the hardest possible curveballs to come in with.
And they
killed
them every
time. Dark
souls
of being a guest star. Because Ashley coming in and she's just like, I've been here the entire time. And then Dennis fit like a fucking glove.
Yeah.
I felt so bad about it in the moment. It's like, she rolled that natural 20. I was just like, hey, give us that classic Dennis catchphrase.
Yeah.
Like, and then she's like, just happy to be here. I was like, God damn it.
Yeah.
So
she did
good.
It. She fucking somehow pulled it out of nothing.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Came up with DILF on the spot.
Oh, was that a her special? I forgot about that.
What do you mean? Mm. What do you mean?
Dedicated, involved, loving father.
Oh, yeah.
Was
that was
her?
That was her.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Jesus.
She should get a cut of that.
I was
going to
say, we owe her some merch money.
An Emmy.
But she was absolutely fantastic in that episode.
And then James.
Fucking Jimmy.
James Wong.
Probably the most pumped I've been on this podcast was the moment that you revealed that you had been talking to Jimmy.
Oh, that was incredible. That's true.
I was
we did not know. Happy
with that. I was beyond chuffed.
This is what I think is probably the funniest moment of the entire series is Jimmy trying to. I don't even remember the context surrounding it, but you were one word at a time trying to like cast this like spell or whatever, and you won't let each other have the fucking last word, and you're getting angrier and angrier at each other.
As somebody who's probably been with Jimmy and Freddie more than almost anybody other than like your family, I love Jimmy and Freddie's special relationship. There's no way you two should have fucked that up. Like, it's the easiest thing ever. You guys didn't finish it. It was so easy not to fuck up that you actually completed
what they were doing.
Jimmy
knew what he was doing.
No, I disagree, because they had it, and Freddie gets annoyed for no fucking reason, and he doubles down, and then Jimmy, I disagree, Jimmy got annoyed, and then it's just like, and they literally
Jimmy didn't like the idea that Freddie was implying Jody should do something, so he's like, I'm taking this back.
Yeah, so they self-sabotage her so hard. It was great, because it's one of those things where the performer's problem mirrored perfectly the character's problem.
Yes,
so
100%.
Jimmy and Freddie sabotage each other in the same exact way that Glenn and Jody would have. It was so funny.
This ends just becoming prepositions was like the funniest
just so furious at each other they won't let it fucking end.
I remember Jimmy kept throwing these like trailing verbs. I was like, what the fuck are you doing?
It's the thing Matt does where like Matt knows how to make bad improv funny. Like, you're incredibly good improv, but then you also know how to really upset people with intentionally bad improv.
You're not my girlfriend.
Henry, what are you doing in that tree? Like, it's just like this antagonistic energy. I was gonna say the other sibling rivalry moment is Mark Light, the fan fiction.
Oh my god, I was screaming.
That's basically us doing a vaudeville, like, let's take the show on the road. Because we already did that kind of gag in Rocket Jump the Show, and we're like, well, nobody saw that, so we could just do the same thing where we hector each other about fan fiction.
Did you guys
have
that prep beforehand? Did you talk about
it? No. Like, it was just a moment we realized it in the moment. I was like, oh, I could just do the fan fiction thing again, and it'll fucking kill in this context. There's even a line where she's like, this was in Rocket Jump the Show. I'm like, nobody fucking listen to the Rocket Jump the Show. Just keep going.
I didn't realize in the moment, but
if I have my sister on and the end boss is me in high school, this is going to get very brutal.
You walked into the wrong room.
I built the room for myself and then walked in and went, oh my God, who put all these traps here?
We should talk very quickly about the body swap episode, because again, a lot of people listening haven't heard Talking Dads. That was, I don't know.
That was fun. I loved playing Henry.
It was a brain melt. Yeah, it was like you being infuriatingly good at Henry like gave me an existential crisis. I was like, what the fuck is happening? And then you were great as Daryl, too.
I've evolved enough that comments don't normally get to me on the Reddit anymore, but like there was one where it's like, I could tell Beth has no respect for Matt because of what she's doing. It fucking crushed me. I was like, oh, fuck. And
Matt wrote that comment.
That was the most fucked up part. When I listen back on it, I wasn't super happy with how I had diminished Daryl to like his like least desire.
It's
but,
fine.
Yeah.
It's
but,
I just a fucking, I would do a barbecue with cops.
That made me laugh very hard.
Every once in a while, I'm like, I don't ever need to get Beth a birthday present because Will and I doing a conversation between Ron and Beth May is probably present enough for a few years.
Oh my God, you're right. Oh my God.
Can we talk about the Maxon's acoustic version of All Right?
Yes, absolutely.
You cried, right?
I did fucking cry. Yeah. I didn't cry like listening to it in the context of the episode, but like I want more of that, which is things I didn't know were happening and then they're suddenly done and available for me.
Oh, a little treat.
Yeah, it was like in the Discord, like, oh, All Right, acoustic version. I mean,
Matt. So Max is such a fucking secret weapon. Like, he's incredible. We've worked with him for years with a bunch of Rocket Jump stuff. He did a ton of the music on Dimension 404. He's just a machine. You can throw anything at him, like, and he will fucking knock it out of the park. Again, he did all of the backing tracks on Rocks Rock, which were just absolute bangers. It made it so, it was like good. The swing version of All Right is such a fucking
very cool.
Oh, I love that.
I remember when Freddie first played All Right to me, it was like, I've been talking to Max. This is what I'm thinking about for the theme of the show. I was like, it took me by surprise because I very stupidly was like, oh, when we do the theme, it should be like a kitschy Lord of the Rings thing. Like, that's what I assumed the theme was going to be. And then he was like, no, I want to do like this rock thing with it. And I was like, oh, I don't know about that. And I listened to the song and I listened to it again. I'm like, this is fucking great. Like, this is really, really good. And yeah, the acoustic version just broke my heart.
I love that the acoustic version is probably going to be the last time you hear, like, because I think for season two, you should have a different song.
Yeah.
That it's like playing itself out in this very personal acoustic way is like so
that's tough,
great.
Dude.
It's weird because unlike VGHS or like ending a show, it's like we're still continuing.
Yeah, no,
but like the song hit me in terms of like on our live listen, which is the first time I listened to the full episode. Like I scanned through it to see if there's any pickups I wanted or whatever. But like the live listen to the acoustic, and then I was like, oh, this is the acoustic. And then I was like, oh shit. I was like, yeah, the show's really over. I was like, damn, like
I
was gone.
I didn't choke up at the song in the live listen, but hearing the curtain call got me.
Yes, that's actually the closest I got to watery eyes.
I think that if the curtain call had happened over like where Freddie normally talks over the song, like I would have lost my life. I would have cried.
It was the weirdest part, but when I heard Jenna's voice, because like Freddie reached out to everybody just separately. So for me, it was the same thing of like, oh, I didn't have anything to do with him to just show up. I was like, oh my God, they even got Jenna. I was like, that's us. What am I talking about? They even got Jenna.
It was the same as hearing the other people's voices. Like,
you know,
oh, other
it's the closest I'll ever to feel to what Frodo felt when he was sitting in the bed and then everyone kept coming to the door. I literally cannot see that scene now and not think of him not knowing like Alyssa's name. Because he says everybody's name. And then he looks at Legolas. He's like, Legolas is like, that's right. And you're like, you buy it. They weren't that in the adventure.
No, they weren't close at all.
And you can imagine him like, he's almost going to say the elf. He's like, no, that's not I shouldn't say that. That'd be bad.
You have a friend group of eight friends that you just met. You're going to forget one.
So thank you for listening to this retrospective on season one of Dungeons & Daddies. We really hope you stick around for not only Fetch Quest, which, again, we've already recorded. It was a lot of fun to record, and I'm sure it's going to be even better once, you know, it's all edited together. And then I hope you stick around for season two and that you enjoy it. And even if you don't do any of those things and you just listen this far, thank you so much.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's been wild to have something that had this degree of positive feedback and that people actually seem to give a shit about. Like, generally, you know, you get to choose, does it do well? Is it actually good? Do people like it? And
two out of three, right?
We get to fuck, marry, and kill this podcast because of you. So thank you so much for listening. It truly means the world to us. And at least for me personally, this is the most creatively satisfying thing I've ever worked on in my life. Mm-hmm. So thank you again.
Thanks very much, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
See you in season two.